This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Reminding everybody that I'm going to be gone tomorrow. Don't yell at me. I have something I got to go do. I'll be back on Friday for an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, though. So get your questions emailed in now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We'll talk about uncooked barbarians here in just a moment. We're going to get into some email roundup. I have an incredible example of them not wanting to leave their world of make-believe. We keep getting all kinds of new ones here. We also had Corinne Diversity hire today. She calls into Charlotte, WBT in Charlotte. And, well, here was the first part of it.
It was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out in a comprehensive way the president's health. This is a president, if you watch him every day, if you really pay attention to his record and what he has done, you will see exactly how focused he's been on the American people, how historic his actions have been. And so I'm not even going to take the premise of your question. I think it is incredibly insulting. And so we can move on to the next question.
That's how it started. Here's how it ended.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then. Big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Look, the president understands. He grew up in a middle-class family, a working-class family.
I almost forget that he does that middle-class joke.
In Pennsylvania, he gets it. You have to remember when the president walked into this administration, there were multiple crises happening. There was COVID. There was the economy was in the tailspin because of the last administration, because of what the President Trump left us with, eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries. Those costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. 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 You know what? That's the most proud I've ever been of Corinne Diversity Hire. Because I do that same thing, Corinne. I mean, I do it to family and friends and stuff like that. You do it to radio hosts you're mad at. But I do the same thing. Hey, when I'm done talking, let's just end this whole thing here. We don't have to do this. All right, let's talk about uncooked barbarians, and then we'll get to some emails and some other stuff. Jamal Bowman is a fascinating character, more fascinating than most people think. Most people outside of New York don't really know who he is. They've maybe seen his face. You obviously know who Jamal Bowman is. And you and me, we've had this talk before. Let's have it again for the new listeners out there. Just a little recap. There are two different kinds of communists. Always have been, always will be. There are elite communist scum, and there are street communist scum. Elite communist scum, those are the people who actually hold power. The politicians and the bureaucrats and the judges, and that these are the communists who hold power. They don't actually believe in communism anymore now that they've made it big, but they're the elite communist scum. Then there are the streets. That's the climate change nutters you see, the street animals gluing themselves to the road, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa types, the street animals. They're always separate. They work with each other. The street animals are allowed to behave like the animals they are because the elites will give them legal cover and legal protection. So they work with each other. And in return, the elites will, they will use the streets for the violence they do. That's why, you know, Chuck Schumer, he's not naive to how this works. He'll get up and give a speech and he'll threaten Supreme Court justices that they'll reap the whirlwind. In fact, he mentioned Kavanaugh specifically. And about 15 minutes later, a street animal from California with a gun flew back to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh. So they work with each other. The elites need the streets and their violence. The streets need the elites and their legal cover. They work with each other. You know this. Occasionally, though, someone will make the transition. Never from elite to street. Once you get to elite, you stay or you die. But from street to elite, it does happen. It happens. But once it happens, the elites, this happens every single time. It happened in the Soviet Union. It happened in China. It happened every single time. The elites, they have to teach the streets that, hey, listen, I know you're a true believer. I get all that. But we don't we don't do that here. We're not true believers here. You understand that we were using you and your bitterness and the fact that you hate yourself and your life and your country. We were using that for power. You see, this is actually about power. All communism is just about power for these people. So they have to sit down with the streets when they make the transition and simply explain, listen, you can't conduct yourself like an animal anymore. This is all about power for us. So shape up. We got to shave off some of the rough edges. And if the streets don't do it, they won't be there very long. The elites will get them out. You see this, as I've explained before, with AOC. AOC used to say these crazy things all the time. And I realize she says them still, but much less often, right? AOC's out there. I support Joe Biden. What? Some commie member of the squad supporting Joe Biden? AOC got cooked. A cooked barbarian. It's how the Romans described civilizing barbarians. It's how the Chinese described civilizing barbarians. You got to cook them. The ones you can't do or haven't cooked yet, they're uncooked. The problem for the American Democrat is, and this has always been a problem for communists, some of them can be cooked, some of them cannot. Why do you think Ilhan Omar is facing a legitimate primary challenge from the establishment in the Democrat Party? You couldn't cook her. She's a dyed-in-the-wool commie. Her parents were dyed-in-the-wool commies. You can't get that out of her. She created too many problems for them. Now they're challenging her. Even if they don't beat her in this primary, they'll beat her in the next one. Ilhan Omar will not be in Congress 10 years from now. Chris, go ahead and write that one down. She will not. They're going to run her out. AOC will. They are not going to challenge AOC. She's being a good little elite now. They're not going to challenge her. Jamal Bowman, I don't think he's going to make it. You remember Jamal Bowman pulled the fire alarm to interrupt the vote he didn't like? Just a total street animal. That's how he's conducted himself his whole life. Oh, no, of course, I'll go yank the fire alarm. Just an animal. It's just, honestly, he's more like a wolf or something like that than a human being. He's just an animal. And recently, you know how Democrats are trying to walk this tightrope with American Jews and American Muslims trying to hold together their domestic voting coalition. So they want Israel to quiet down and Gaza to quiet down. They need it all to quiet down and go away. And they need domestic Democrats to quiet down, too. Don't create problems for us. Jamal Bowman goes and hits the streets in New York City and he says, there were no rapes of Israeli women. This was propaganda used in the beginning of the siege. There's still no evidence of beheaded babies or raped women. This is a direct quote. They still keep using that for a lie, he said this a couple days ago. Well, Jamal Bowman, once again, just like after he pulled the fire alarm, got pulled into the office from the elites. Hakeem Jeffries had to sit down with him once again and explain to him that we need you to not chew with your mouth open. All right? We need you to become civilized. This was Jamal Bowman from today. As I said at this rally, what Hamas did on October 7th is a war crime, and they must release all hostages. The UN confirmed that Hamas committed rape and sexual violence, a reprehensible fact that I condemn entirely. And he goes on to say a couple other things. Why a complete 180? He stands on the streets like an animal and claims nobody was raped. No dead babies. Then, a couple days later, sounds totally different. Why? They're cooking him, or trying to. But I have my doubts from what I've seen so far that Jamal Bowman is going to be able to be cooked. He's going to go the route of Ilhan Omar. AOC, she's going to be the one who lasts. She'll be in Congress for 20, 30 years, raising a bunch of money. The Jamal Bowmans, the Ilhan Omars, they're not going to make it. They're just not going to make it. All right. I want to talk. Well, you know what? We'll do an email roundup, and then we'll do another amazing example of these people wanting to stay in their world of make-believe. Look, maybe you live in a world of make-believe. Maybe you live in this world that tells you, hey, I can keep my testosterone levels up if I eat right and get better sleep. And don't get me wrong, you need to eat right and you need to get good sleep. You need to take active steps to get your T levels back up, gentlemen. America has lost half of its testosterone in the last 50 years. We are now making so few babies, and I don't know if that's how you put that, that we are facing societal collapse in 30, 40, 50 years. We're just not making enough babies. We're going through what Japan's going through right now. Female vitality stacks for the ladies and male vitality stacks for the men. It's time to get strong again. It's time to get in better moods. You know you need testosterone for your mood, gentlemen? You depressed a lot? Give it 90 days, a male vitality stack. Get a subscription so you save money. 90 days, experience a totally different world. CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. Ladies, get a female vitality stack. Get some chocolate powder. Go. Chuck.com, promo code Jesse.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Google, Spotify, iTunes. We need to clear out some serious emails here before we get to Friday.
We're changing people's lives.
Hello, Ninja. Monday, March 25th, third hour, I think, you let an audio clip play through without interruption. The show has a two-hour delay in Albany, New York, and I was in bed when it happened. So I marked it on my calendar the next day. I had already forgotten the time and subject. I cannot remember clearly after all this time, but one night in the spring of 2023, you let an audio clip play all the way too. I kept forgetting to mark that on my calendar. I wonder if another listener noticed this event as well. This could be literally the anniversary we can celebrate annually. That's not right. I let audio clips play. Yeah, I do, Chris. I let some of them play all the way through. I let the Frito Bandito play all the way through.
Ay, 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 ay.
Sometimes when I'm playing an audio clip, I have things to say during the middle of it. I guess I should probably explain something. I don't plan out the show. There's no plan. Chris and Michael, they throw a bunch of articles and stuff in front of me, and we have some audio cuts and stuff from the day. And then we just kind of go wherever the wind takes us. So sometimes ideas will pop into my head during an audio clip, and I want to stop and talk about it. I know. I do not have ADHD.
Ay, 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 ay. I am the Frito Bandito. Hey, I like Fritos corn chips. I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips. I'll get them from you. Ay, 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 ay. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos corn chips and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend. Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos.
Jesse, your Aunt Peggy sounds hot. Can you tell us what she looks like? She's, of course, talking about liberal Aunt Peggy, the fictional, made-up, crazy communist woman that I talk about all the time in the show. We all have a liberal Aunt Peggy in our life. It's funny because we actually have a hardcore anti-communist listener named Peggy, and it grades on her to no end that that is the name I've settled on for liberal Aunt Peggy. And let me just say to you, real Peggy, I can't change now. All right, branding is what it is. Just pretend like I'm not talking about you. All right, so what does liberal Aunt Peggy look like in my mind? Well, she's super skinny. And I don't mean as in a healthy weight skinny, too skinny. You know why? Because she exists on wine and anti-anxiety medication. And whenever you offer her a real meal, hey, you want to go grab a cheeseburger? She's never hungry, right? She doesn't. She's so mixed up. Yeah, that's right, Chris. Vegan skinny. Kind of unhealthy skinny. Skinny, but not muscle skinny. Kind of just stick and bones type thing. She wears glasses. And I look, I'm not insulting anyone who wears glasses. I've already walked you through my saga. Stop, Michael. Stop. Okay? Michael wears glasses. I'm not insulting people who wear glasses. I have glasses. I actually was in I had to go to Ohio last weekend to celebrate my father-in-law's 70th birthday. So me, wife, and the kids, we flew back to Ohio. And on the way back from the airport, I saw a sunglass hut. You ever see a sunglass hut? Well, I used to see sunglass huts all the time when I was a kid, and I would walk by, and sometimes I would walk in, but it was always kind of heartbreaking. You go in and you gawk, oh, look at these Oakleys or something like that, but you can never afford. You know, who has $200 to spend on sunglasses? You can never afford anything in there, but you would go gawk. So I used to not go to Sunglass Hut because I couldn't afford any glasses. And now I don't go to Sunglass Hut because they don't have my prescription. So now I'll never buy anything from Sunglass Hut. I know. Anyway, so I'm not insulting anyone who wears glasses, but liberal Aunt Peggy definitely has glasses. And more than anything, you can tell liberal Aunt Peggy because of that crazed look in her eye. She carries that look around a lot. You know exactly what I'm talking about, too. There's a picture. Actually, you can look this up. If you're not driving, you can look up this picture. I'll help you visualize it. But there's a picture. There's this woman, obviously a very, very sick individual. She's protesting at an event, and she's wearing a shirt that she had custom made for herself. And the shirt says, "I've had 21 abortions." That's what the shirt says. And obviously that's unbelievably sick and awful, and we hate that, and it's terrible. But once you get past the shirt, go look it up. Go look. I'm sure woman 21 abortion shirt. I'm sure it'll pop right up. Chris, make sure I'm right about that. Chris is looking it up right now. More than the shirt, though, it's the look in her eyes. That look in her eyes. And I don't know. Look, I don't want to speak to this. I don't know whether that's drugs, bitterness. I don't know whether it's demon possession. I don't know what it is. Chris, are you looking at her? You see her? You'll find it eventually. Maybe that's not how you find it, but the look in her eyes says it all. Bugging out of her head, angry, crazed. That's liberal Aunt Peggy. And you have someone like that in your life. Speaking of liberal Aunt Peggy, we've been talking about this world of make-believe these people live in, and how you can't join them there. We can try to pull them out of it, but you and me, we have to accept something, that we can't save them all. And we probably can't save most of them. We can try, and we should try, but we can't save them all. Why? Because they want to live in that world. I have a great, great clip of this. I'll play you in just a second before I do that. Do you want to be pain-free? I have been telling you about Relief Factor, and I've been telling you that the ibuprofen is wrecking your liver. Well, we had a good doctor email the show. Her name is Lisa. She said I could use her name, and she absolutely scolded me that ibuprofen does not wreck your liver, just your kidneys. So stop wrecking your kidneys and find a natural solution to deal with pain. That's what Relief Factor is, a drug-free, all-natural solution to deal with pain. Neck, back, joints, muscles. You don't have to live with this nagging pain. And it works. They know it works. They sell, you know what they sell is three-week kits, three-week quick start kits, $19.95. They're like, hey, take it for 3 weeks. You'll be back. And everyone does. Call them and get one. 1-800-4-RELIEF, or you can go to relieffactor.com. All right? We'll be back.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, reminding you, you can email the show and should your love, your hate, your death threats, and more importantly, your Ask Dr. Jesse questions for Friday, because I'll be gone tomorrow. Email those into jesse@jessekellyshow.com. All right, I'm going to play something for you right now. And I need to do a little setup for it. Right before you hear the clip, there's a psychologist. His name's Jonathan Haidt. You're John Haidt. He was on Joe Rogan's show. And they were talking about the Trump bloodbath comments. Remember how media ran with that and lied about it. And Joe Rogan played for him just the bloodbath comments. That is the setup to this conversation. And listen, they go through it. And this John Haidt's talking about how terrible it was and it's evil and it's wrong. And then you'll hear in the clip, Rogan then plays the longer clip for him. That's the money part. When Rogan plays the longer clip, I want you to listen to this guy. Listen to his response. Listen to his response after he hears the context. And understand, this is why liberal Aunt Peggy never comes around to your argument when you cite facts, when you show her video, when you show her clear evidence that everything she believes is wrong and evil. These people want to stay in that world.
That's what he said.
Well, that sounds pretty bad. That sounds like the Flight 93 election argument, that if I don't win, the country's over.
But what he was, but what he's talking about is this subversion of our economy and the subversion of our democracy, that we will never have an election again. I don't think he's saying that it'll be a bloodbath in terms of a civil war.
Joe Rogan's not some conservative. And by the way, I don't know him. I'm not friends with him. I have anything against him. I don't know him. But you hear Rogan, who's a very nonpartisan guy, calmly explaining to this communist, well, yeah, but that's not really what he was saying, right? And so here he's going through the explanation.
Well, the economy's going to be like destroyed.
There was no, I was listening for that. I was thinking maybe he meant it as a metaphor.
Speech.
I didn't hear any. I mean, the bloodbath is...
It's an unfortunate term, but what he's not, I don't think he's saying it's a civil war.
It sounded to me like he was. It sounded to me like, you know, if he doesn't win, there will be violence.
Right.
You have to really give him a hell of a lot of benefit of the doubt.
He's talking about the economy. He was talking about China, building plants. He's talking about all these things and saying that if he doesn't get elected, it's going to be a blood.
We're coming up on the best part where Rogan just plays the full clip, the full context for him. And this is the money part. His response after, he doesn't want to leave the cave.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess. I don't think he's specific. I mean, I think he would elaborate on that if he was saying there'll be violence. I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's saying destruction of our economy, the destruction of our...
He makes a lot of asides. So he was talking about the economy. That's true. And then he said, if I'm not elected... And then he makes an aside about what would happen to the country.
The video we watched cuts it off right after he says bloodbath.
It's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine All he does is build car manufacturing.
Okay, so he's back on the economy.
But
the aside was not about the economy. The aside was him making one of these typical asides about how, you know, how important he is. All right, Joe, I think we're not going to settle this.
Remember my sky is green theory? This guy, John Haidt, he can look up at the sky, the same sky you're looking up at, maybe right now, and your eyes tell you it's blue. Obviously, you can see it's blue. It's not a mystery. And he should be able to see it's blue. His eyes work, but he looks up and he sees green. You're the average American Democrat exists in a world that is not real. As I have explained many, many times, we have to start operating as if we're dealing with people who are insane. And this is one of the very few times where I'm genuinely not trying to be insulting. They believe things that are simply not true, and they believe them all the way. No different than the guy who believes he can fly and jumps off of a building. The average American Democrat, because they exist in a world of lies, they consume only lies, they read only lies, they want to believe only lies, they don't want you to save them. They don't want to wake up. Oh, yeah, please play it, Chris. It's a great clip. It actually reminds me of Soviet defector, former KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov. And this clip we've played many, 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 many times for you.
Ideological subversion is the slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, aktivne meroприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it.
Sound familiar at all? Remind you of the last argument debate you had with liberal Aunt Peggy? It's the truth. Hey, Jesse. My son and I were listening to your show yesterday afternoon, and he heard you say Flamers for Freedom. That one didn't come out the way I had wanted to. Anyway, he said he thought about it for a second and responded with, I know what that means. Nothing could have prepared me for his response. He said, it means burning down houses to stop the communists from getting in. I was laughing. He's sick. I have also heard you speaking about the looming financial crisis we're facing. I wanted to ask you to paint a picture of what that might look like. How can we prepare? Thanks for all you do. And it's from Tori. Okay. Let's talk about this financial crisis. Let's Let's talk about this just briefly here. BlackRock did something today. They made a move that should be alarming. Home prices are down 20%. That's also alarming. There are some trends that make it seem as if we're facing something pretty rough. And let's talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, maybe hearing about the financial crisis, maybe it keeps you up at night. There are things that keep us up at night, right? Plenty of things to look around and worry about at this point in time. You're up at night. I'm not. And you know the difference between you and me? I'm in my MyPillow Giza Dream Sheets. That's the difference between you and me. What, Chris? MyPillow's Giza Dream Sheets are the greatest sheets ever. And they have a huge sale on them right now. $59.98 gets you a queen size set of Giza Dream Sheets, a king size set for just $10 more. But maybe even better than that is the My Slippers. The OG, the original My Slippers Mike came up with. It has this three-layer design on the things. They're indoor, outdoor. It was trash day today in my area. Out there taking out the trash in my slippers. Right back inside. Go take advantage of the sales. Get you some sheets. Get you some slippers. MyPillow.com. Click on the Radio Listener Special square and use the promo code Jesse. Or call 800-845-0544. It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Very pleased now to welcome in Yael Eckstein, president of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Yael, first of all, where are you right now? You're always someplace crazy.
Thank you so much for having me on. I am someplace crazy. I'm in Israel, in Jerusalem.
What is going on? Americans don't, we see what we see on the news, right? And you know how much you can trust whatever you see on the news. What is day-to-day life like for the people in your area?
It's a great question. On one hand, Israel is the most resilient country in the world. I was here during the Second Intifada when there were people blowing themselves up, suicide bombers on buses, and people still took buses. I mean, shootings in coffee shops, and people were still sitting in coffee shops. I think it's kind of this internal faith and just dedication to life and striving for joy that in Israel we refuse to be victims, and we continue to just have this resilience that's out of this world. Just this year, even after the October 7th attacks, Israel was rated the fifth happiest country in the world. And so on one hand, on day-to-day life, we are still going to coffee shops and still getting together with family and rejoicing and praying and living life as normal. And on the other hand, we are used to running to bomb shelters as rockets are coming into our towns, and our husbands and our fathers and our children are out protecting the borders in the Gaza Strip. We're going to funerals almost daily of people who are killed by the terrorists. So there's a resilience that is so beautiful and inspiring, but there's a pain that can't be described in words.
October 7th obviously is a day everyone remembers. Everyone remembers it. Did things change there after that day? And I asked the question this way. As you noted, terrorist attacks in Israel are not exactly some kind of new thing. This has been the entirety of the state of Israel's existence. Yet it feels, at least from afar, I haven't been there since then, it feels like something changed. Did it?
Well, first of all, I want to invite you to come to Israel and be our guest. We would love that. We would be so honored to have you here in Israel and really experience it for yourself. And I think what really changed on October 7th was that following the Holocaust, and I speak this as the grandchild and daughter-in-law of Holocaust survivors, we thought that the world was different because there was this slogan of never again that the world would chant, and that we had the state of Israel where people recognized we need a Jewish homeland, because for 2,000 years of exile, we have been persecuted as Jewish people. We have been killed. We have been murdered. We have been kicked out. And that's besides the fact that this is God's word and prophecy coming to fruition, that the fact that the Jewish people have returned to Jerusalem to renew this Hebrew language is something prophetic and beautiful. But also on a practical side, people understood the Jewish people need to defend themselves. We saw not too long ago what happens when we're not able to do that. 6 million people burned in gas chambers. And it's a reminder that even today, the Jewish people have yet to reach the number of Jews that there was before the Holocaust. And so what changed on October 7th was that we realized we are still in a fight for survival. We are still facing a real existential threat on our border, despite the Abraham Accords and the amazing relationships that we have come to have with many Arab countries. And what's terrifying is that we see the rise in anti-Semitism is very similar to 1935, 1936. But I'll tell you one thing that we see that's very different. What we see that's very different is that for the first time in history, the Jewish people are not alone. We have millions of Christian friends who are saying, you want to get to Israel, you'll have to stand in front of me first. You see the UN resolutions, you see many different policies of American government and of the UN and of the EU and the Arab Union, and you have millions of Christians from China to America to Canada to Europe saying, not on my watch. I am speaking up and I'm standing with Israel. And that's where it's different. And that is the strength, the hope, the huge appreciation that I feel on the ground here in Israel as I represent those millions of Christians.
Yeah, Eyal, I actually got back from Israel about 2 months before that terrorist attack. We went as a show over there. So we went and we were there. And that's what made it so wild for us that we'd just gotten back. And then everything happened. And I'll tell you, a lot of things hit me about it. You know, it was wild to, you know, walk where Jesus walked and see the dungeon they had him in. It was just crazy to see all that. Yeah. And one of the things that got me was the relationship with Islam in Israel. A lot of people from a foreign perspective, they view this as, you know, Muslims and Jews spitting on each other all day long, trying to murder each other. But they don't understand how interwoven the Muslim community is in places like Jerusalem. They don't get it at all.
You're 100% correct. This whole idea of Israel being in apartheid, for example, in Israel, we laugh about that. People even say that 20% of the citizens of Israel aren't Jewish, are Christian, are Muslim, are Druze, are Bedouin, and they serve in the Israeli army, and they have free healthcare, and they have the same schooling that my children have, and they serve in the government, and it's full and equal opportunity and treatment. And so you have doctors, you go into a hospital, most of the doctors, most of the nurses are Muslim. You go anywhere into any store and they speak openly Arabic. And on the street signs, you have Arabic right next to Hebrew. In fact, today there were over 30 rockets fired at Kiryat Shmona. That's in northern Israel by Hezbollah terrorists. There were many direct hits and one person was killed and it was a Druze. That's an Arab man who was killed as he was working in an Israeli factory, proud Israeli, and even serving in the army. And so the fellowship's response to that, you know, we unfortunately can't make the terrorists surrender or it can't help them. We can't make them stop launching rockets. But what the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews does on the ground is that we're here to save Jewish lives who are in the line of fire. And so this morning, there was a direct hit. There were people killed. There were rocket attacks. And by this afternoon, we had 5 bulletproof and shrapnel-proof vehicles going to the heads of security to every town on the northern border. We added more meals to our soup kitchens to feed the elderly. And we just approved 23 emergency vehicles and 9 bulletproof ambulances. And so, like you said, in Israel, it's kind of this utopia of all 3 Abrahamic faiths, especially in Jerusalem, coming together to actually be able to live together, to have freedom at the holy spaces, to pray for one another, to enjoy one another, to learn from one another. And so the fellowship is there on the ground to say, we see the people. We are not getting involved in, unfortunately, being able to bring peace maybe to the region, but we can bring food to the Holocaust survivor and tell her it's from a Christian in America who loves her. And for her and for the people of Israel, that changes everything.
It is the IFCJ. Love their work, Yael. Thank you so much for giving us a little perspective on what's going on out there. Go support them. Support what they do. All right. Now we have another hour. We have to tackle things like political symbols and Krispy Kreme donuts. First, we have to tackle abortion, though. Let's talk about preborn. Listen, I get your emails. We got another one the other day of you're giving to preborn and you talk to your family about it. One of the most blessed things about preborn is the email updates they give you when you become part of the preborn family that you can share with family and friends. Lives saved. I get emails. You cry with your kids about how wonderful it is saving lives. It's not just talking about it. There is a baby as we speak that's about to be killed by its mother. She needs an ultrasound. She needs you to get her one for free. She needs your $28. To preborn, they'll give her a free ultrasound, and she will choose life. It's all tax deductible. You can give them $28,000 if you can. Preborn.com/Jesse. Save a life tonight. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We got an hour left.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.